I'm going to, like you said, I'm going to talk about the impact of the population dynamics of fly inhabiting Franklinia thrips on cotton haddock disease. But I think we'll have to start with introducing the disease at all. The disease actually manifests in the bowls, and like you can see from here, when you have a healthy bowl, this is how it looks like, and you can see how fluffy the fibers look like. But when you have the disease, then you don't have this fluffy nature of the fibers. The fibers tend to get compacted, and they don't fluff out as we see in the normal healthy bowl. And in this case, you have the bowls manifesting like a slice of orange. What happens with that is that when you have the disease, two things happen. When you are during harvesting, the first thing is that the cotton pickers are not able to pick the hardlock bowls. So some remain, in fact, most of them remain on the plant. Another thing that also happens is that you have some of them too, in the course of the picker picking them and not able to pick them out, they actually get knocked down to the ground or the floor. So it's the combined effect of this, those remaining on the plants and then those that have been knocked out to the ground, that actually results in the reduced yields. We actually took a look at the fibers, both the normal fibers and then the disease fibers, to look at how they look like. And under the microscope, you can see from here that the disease ones are flattened in nature, but the healthy ones look round, as you can see from here. We also tried to look at the fibers to see whether any organisms are there. And when we did staining, you can see from here that where you have this blue coloration, and then you can also see that we have these macroconidia, which are typical of Fusarium. So that also told us or showed us that actually Fusarium could be a culprit. And further studies actually proved that Fusarium is a causal agent of the disease. The disease has been around for a while, I think a long time, but it has not assumed the sort of importance that it is now. Some work that was done by Wright and others in 2002 showed that actually the disease reduced cotton yield in the panhandle area by about 50% to 60%. And on average, it reduced yields in that area from about 650 pounds per acre to about to less than 400 pounds per acre. When they put monetary value on this yield loss, it amounted to about $20 million, and that tells you how important the disease is. With that, when it was more or less established that Fusarium is a causal agent, then there are other things that came to mind, that, well, could some insects play some role as vectors, since we know some insects are really involved as vectors in some of these diseases. And what happened was that one group of insects that came to mind were thrips. So we tried to evaluate this in the greenhouse, and we applied thrips and then Fusarium and then to cotton flowers in the greenhouse. And the results, like you can see from here, where we have a combination of thrips and then Fusarium, cotton haddock, the percentage of the disease was actually high, and it was significantly higher than when you have Fusarium and thrips alone. This actually showed us that, well, it could be that thrips are involved. And therefore, we decided if this is happening in the greenhouse, then why not try it in the field to see whether that is what happens. And that actually formed the basis, or it formed the objective of our study, to see whether because we thought that, well, one way of finding out whether thrips are actually involved is to monitor the population fluctuations of these insects in the field over time and see how it impacts on the disease. So that formed our objective. So objective was to find the impact of the population dynamics of fly inhabiting Franklinia thrips on cotton haddock disease. We chose two sites, one Mariana and then one in Quincy, where we are. Actually, these two sites are separated by about 40 miles. We established a field in each of these places, and the field, actually, the dimensions were about 100 meters by 14 meters. And each field is comprised of four blocks. We planted this to 60 rows of cotton plants, and we use the variety that we use was actually DPL 555. After planting, we waited until blooming before we actually started sampling for thrips because the disease manifests in the flowers. Now, we did sampling once every week, and we sampled for 8 weeks. We normally sampled between the hours of 11 and 12. And I must also indicate that throughout the study period, we did not apply any pesticide at all. When we started sampling, that when it started blooming, we started sampling. For each field, we sampled 40 flowers from 40 plants. So we take a flower from each plant. And what we do with the sampling was actually we're using destructive sampling. So when you pick the flower, you immediately invert it into this sampling bottle, which contains 70% ethanol, and we take this to the lab for processing. Now, on the same day, around the same time that we're doing the trip sampling, what we also did was to tag 100 flowers from 100 plants, so a flower from each plant, and this is what we use. Actually, when we tag, we don't pick the flower. We keep the flower until when they form bulls, and then we are ready for Hallock assessment. And we use actually 40 bulls because when we were doing the Hallock assessment, because some of the flowers actually aborted and some of the bulls who got aborted. So we agreed to use 40 bulls for the assessment of Hallock. We assessed Hallock 2 weeks before harvesting. This is just to show you the field, and you can see we tried as much as possible to clean the surrounding of the floor so that we would not have thrips inhabiting those places. Now let's look at the results. We found out that there were three Franklinella species, and these are F. treatisi, F. occidentalis, and F. bispinosa. But we saw that the adult population, treatisi form more than 98% of that. Now let's look at the population dynamics then. In 2006, we saw that when we started the sampling, the thrips density per flower was about 5, but it began to climb, and we got peak blooms, peak densities of thrips. Usually, we got it around July, late July to the middle of August. And this period where we got a peak bloom of the peak densities of the insects was actually the time too that we had peak bloom of the cotton plants. In 2007 in Quincy, we observed about the same trend or similar trend. And you can see that peak bloom actually occurred around about August, the middle of August. And that is the time that we also got the peak densities of thrips. In Mariana, we got a similar trend. And you can see from here that peak densities of thrips were actually obtained around the 11th of August, which was around the mid. In 2007, we saw it slightly because we planted 2 weeks late. So we got thrips, the peak densities of the thrips around the middle of July, because it was delayed about 2 weeks. And you can see from here, that also coincided with the peak densities, the peak bloom of the plants. We use linear regression to find the relationship between the trips numbers and then the Hallock. In 2006, like you can see from here, we got a positive association between the two. And but the R-square values, like you can see from here, was very low, 0.09, and it was not significant, like you can see from this p-value. In 2007 in Quincy, we observed the same thing. R-square was about 0.9, and the p-value, it was still not significant. In 2006 in Mariana, we saw the same trend, a positive association between the two. But here you can see that the R-square value increased a bit, but still it was not significant, as you can see from the p-value. In 2007, we saw a slightly different instead of a positive association, we got a negative association between the two. The R square value was also small, and the P value was big, so it's still not significant. But I will also say that 2007 in that area was one of the driest years. So I think that also affected this result. What we also did was that we also calculated the mean trips density per flower for the whole season, and if you perform a regression on that against the disease, we actually got a negative association between the two. So in conclusion, what we by the results that we obtained, we can say that trips actually seem to play some role, but it looks as if the role that they play is just minor. Other factors seem to play a more important role. And by the data that we also got, we also see that it looks as if trips numbers actually, the density that you get for a season does not really directly tell you the severity of hardlock that you are going to get. So if you get high trips numbers for a season, it does not relate directly that you are going to get high hardlock incidence or severity for that season. And based on this, I want to thank these individuals who helped in this project. And we also want to state that by cooperative research agreement with this organization, Cotton Incorporated, USDA, RSA, and then ARS, and then we also want to thank the state of Florida for the assistance that they provided. With this, I want to thank all of you and to invite questions.
Okay.
Why were there no juvenile trips? Was it the wrong time of day to catch that part of the population?
There were juvenile trips.
There were very few.
Very few, yeah.
Why?
I actually didn't know, but one thing that I can say that with where we, from where we located the plots, most of the adults actually were migratory trips.
Yeah. Why would migratory trips be the part of the population of interest? I would think the juveniles would be the ones hanging around the flowers, you know, spending some real quality time there.
Yeah, I actually didn't know why we actually got those low juvenile numbers. I think so. I think it could have contributed. Yeah, I think it could have contributed.
No, we just
summed them.